Hi everyone, and welcome to the Say As It Is with Pete podcast series. I'm Pete, your host, and each week I will bring you some frank and honest conversations covering various topics from learning and development, friendships, funding, HR, strengths, recruitment, ESG, well-being, ED&I, employability, and much, much more. So let's get this week's episode underway and say as it is. Hey everybody, it's Pete, your favourite podcast host. Now, this is an intro to an intro, so I do apologise. But welcome to season three of Say As It Is with Pete. So we are kicking off season three, which is fantastic. So thank you to everybody that has listened, tuned in and subscribed. But this episode is slightly different this week because the episode you're about to listen to is an episode that was recorded for a bonus episode for season two, but for some reason it never got released, and I'm not sure why I didn't release it, but it's been sitting there ready to be released, and it's around the sick note generation, and it's one that I recorded to post out as a bonus episode. Don't know what happened, but it never met the cutting floor to go out, so I just came across it and thought it's still relevant, and it's only recently been recorded anyway. So let's kick off episode one of season three with a bonus episode instead of the sick note generation. So do listen to this episode. Remember, if you want to share it with anybody, do share it with everybody. I know the end kind of sounds a bit strange, as it should have been released on a Friday for the weekend to resume a normal episode on a Monday, but please ignore that. Take this as a little bit of a backtrack on an episode. But enjoy, although this is a bit of a mixed match for episode one of season three, there are lots more interesting episodes coming in season three. So there'll be another 22 to 23 episodes this season. So keep listening and enjoy this episode. And yeah, what are you waiting for? Let's get going. Hey everybody, welcome to a bonus episode. Yes, a bonus episode of Say As It Is with Pete. And as usual, I'm your host, Pete. So in this bonus episode, what I want to do is, I mentioned it on my previous podcast, something called the sick note generation. Now, what is the sick note generation? Now, I've been looking at this because I've heard it come up a couple of times now. And I think predominantly in the lovely world of kind of HR, when we look at this, it becomes more and more evident. So the term sick note generation in the UK might refer to discussions around the, assurance of medical certifications for absences from work due to illness. So recently there have been updates in the systems allowing a broader range of healthcare professionals beyond our GPs to issue these fit notes. So this move aims to streamline the process, support individuals into returning to work, and address uncertainty or unnecessary challenges previously faced in obtaining a sick note. So the government emphasis is that work can be beneficial for health and recovery. So suggesting that individuals do not need to be fully recovered to return to work, which can actually aid recovery. But when looking a little bit more, the UK has implemented changes allowing a wider range of healthcare professionals, as I said, to issue sick notes. So this is aiming to reduce the bureaucracy and improve patient care. So this change is designed to help manage the significant NHS waiting times, which has seen a 6.5 million or seen 6.5 million people waiting for treatment as of April 2022, that's up from the 4.4 million in February 2020. So these adjustments are intended to streamline the process for patients needing to take time off due to health conditions and support with their return to work. Now, also, when I was looking at this, I did come across an article on the Daily Mail about, the sick note and young people So, looking at that article, the article discusses the increasing trend among young people to cite medical issues or medical health issues as reasons for work absences, raising debates on whether this affects the real rise in mental health problems or if it's perceived as an instance to heighten sensitivity or snowflaking. So snowflaking among the younger generation. So critics argue over the authenticity of these claims, suggesting a deeper examination of societal attitudes towards mental health and work ethic among individuals need to be looked at. So as you can see, the Sick Note generation is very topical in some aspects, and it does affect us in many ways, especially in the working world. And it always seems to be thrown back at the young people, saying that, well, the young just don't want to work, so if they don't want to work, they'll get a sick note and they'll make out they've got depression or anxiety, or they're suffering, with an other mental health disorder. That's a typical generation, right? And don't get me wrong, I am an advocate of mental health. I teach mental health within my day-to-day job, and I, fly the mental health flag because I think mental health and well-being is key for any organization. But it seems that some people might be misusing the system. And unfortunately, it tends to focus on the younger generation misusing it. And I don't know whether that is true or not, and I would love to hear people's views, but I think we have to look at this. We realize that 6.5 or 6.5 million people are on the waiting list with the NHS, and it's not getting any easier. You've got doctor strikes, nurses strikes, you've got all sorts of strikes within the NHS, and they're starting to calm down slightly now with agreeing with pay rates and various other things, but it's still not great because the more they go on strike, the issue becomes that the waiting lists get longer, and the more the waiting lists get longer, the more appointments gets pushed back, all sorts of things. And I've had it, like I've got long-term health medical conditions, and unfortunately, some appointments do get pushed back, some surgeries get pushed back, and you're waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting until you get another appointment. And in some cases, it can be too late from the diagnosis. And unfortunately, that is the case. There was lots of people during the pandemic that were diagnosed with cancer, for example, but after the pandemic. So in some cases, treatment was way gone. They wasn't able to do anything, or they're catching it at a later stage rather than an earlier stage where we could catch it. And I think from a mental health perspective, and look, I'm not a GP and I don't have a medical degree and I don't have a PhD to be a doctor, especially in the field of medical care. But with all of what happened in the pandemic, I think we all need to learn from it that, we're going to learn lots of things. And I do have a podcast coming up as a bonus episode on what can we learn from the pandemic. And the reason why I'm doing that is because we have to wait 3 years for even to find out what the inquiry brings. But actually, I've kind of done my own version in a lot less time. So keep an eye out for that. But as we talk about the sick note generation, I think it's that thing where, as a working world, we have to adapt. And I think as employers, in education sectors as well, we have to think about the individual. And when we think of that individual, there is something I think we all need to see. So bear with me because I'm going to get it up. 2 seconds. I'm going to have a look because I can't find it. 2 seconds. Okay, I found it. So apologies. I had to pause there to find what I was looking for. And what I was looking for is the Maslow heresy theory. Now, the Maslow heresy of needs is a model for understanding the motivations of human behavior. So these include both psychological needs, safety, love, belonging, esteem, self-confidence, self-actualization, and then also what we need as individuals. So in teaching and training, and I refer to this when you do look at it, at the Maslow heresy theory or heresy needs is very simple. From, let's go from the bottom up. So if we adopt this theory a bit more and we look at it, and some people look at it and go, oh, really? In the working world? In everyday life, we need to be using it, people. So, the Maslow hierarchy of needs looks from bottom to top. So, bottom is your psychological needs. So, that's making sure you've got things like air, water, food, shelter. You can get sleep, clothing, and also that you can kind of look at, reproduction, for example. Then, from your psychological needs, you need to step up, and then you need your safety needs. So, this is your personal security, employment, resources, health, and property. Then we move into love and belonging. Yes, it's there. It's bang in the middle. So, this is about friendship, inclusivity, family, sense of connection. And then we move on to esteem. So, that's looking at respect, self-esteem, looking at our status, recognition, our strengths, and our freedom. And I love the word strengths in the esteem part because, I'm a strengths coach practitioner, and I think once you identify your strengths, especially when you're looking at your esteem, if you're identifying your significance and strengths, your bumming unders and your drainers, that's going to help you as well. And then finally, right at the top of the berg, right at the top of that pyramid, is self-actualization. Can't even say the word. So that's a desire to become the most that one can be. So when we're looking at that, and I think that's key, because what it's doing is it's showing that the Maslow theory stated that people are motivated to achieve certain needs that they sometimes need to take prevalence over others. So, I may have said that wrong, but basically, to be able to achieve what we want in life, we need to feel that we have all these parts, especially when you're putting like a training course together. If you're putting a training course together, are you thinking that is, do people have what they need for that session? Is there food? Is there water? Is there comfort? Is there safety? Can they feel that they belong in a part of that? So it's looking at it and going, well, let's have a look at it. Let's see if those things are there and are they being provided. And I think in some cases we need to look at that in general, because it's all about our needs. So even the basic, again, the psychological side of it. Can you breathe? Can you eat? Can you drink? Can you have sex? Can you sleep? Are you able to have that foundation where you feel comfortable that you've got toilets, things like that? And then, the safety side is that, is there security for yourself, safety, belonging, security of family, health, property, all those kind of things. So there's lots of things that, we look for as an individual. And I think sometimes we as organizations need to show individuals themselves that all of this can be found in the working world. And I had this conversation today with somebody called Malcolm, who's a actor, singer, and performer, and a writer as well. And he was introduced me through a conversation I was having around the topic of blackout days in the theatre. And blackout days is in reference to only allowing people of certain color to partake in certain dates for shows. So, two blackout days would be 2 days where only black people can go to the theater to see this performance, to feel that they can be in a safe, comfortable environment with their own kind of community, and they feel safe in that environment instead of having the white gaze looking at them. And there are two new words I found out today: blackouts, which is different to what I know what blackout is, and then this white gaze thing. So we had this really good conversation about it today, and it spurred onto other routes of conversations. And 4 hours later, I'm sitting thinking, oh my God, I've got to take a call at 3:00. And I'm sitting there 4 hours later, still having this wonderful conversation with Malcolm. And we were talking about various things, and including this, and it's all about people feeling that you need to belong. And having those honest conversations, and this is why I love doing this podcast, because I have these honest, frank conversations and I say it as it is from my perspective. And hopefully it helps, inspires, and provides some information, advice, and guidance, and throws another perspective and light onto the topics. And I know it has in the past, because I've got messages saying, you know, thanks to that podcast, it really helped me to achieve X, Y, and Z. Or you've really helped me kind of understand a bit more, or actually your view and points are quite interesting. And then we'll get into debate. But I think the questions we need to have as employers are very frank, open, and honest conversations. We shouldn't have to feel that we need to apologize for everything, and we shouldn't feel we have to tiptoe round everything. We should be able to have those conversations that are open, honest, and frank, and get to the point. Yes, some of those conversations may be difficult, but if you are an adult and you can communicate effectively, then some of those thoughts, views, and opinions can be challenged constructively, and we can learn from them. But I think with the sick note generation, because people are suffering with anxiety, depression, low self-esteem, low confidence, some people were locked away for 2-3 years in the pandemic, especially the vulnerable, they can't get back into work. We have 1.4 million, you know, uneconomically active. That's what I want to say. Active people that are out there that we're not connecting with, employees that want to come to work. But again, they need help getting into work. And I think that many people, they'll go into the working environment, their anxiety, you know, the pressure of the working environment will all kick up. And then before we know it, they've only come in for 1-2 days. And then we've got a sick note for them being off with depression and anxiety. And we're sitting there tapping our fingers thinking, well, what is this? We can't do anything because, you know, they're covered by the Disability and Discrimination Act. So we have to follow process now. Oh my God, what are we going to do? We need to stop that. Like, that mindset needs to change. Like, people, wake the hell up. When you look at the Maslow hierarchy of needs, we should all be meeting this in the day-to-day work, our working life, our personal life, whatever. But what we need to do as employers is become savvy. We're all very skilled and experienced in what we do, but we don't listen enough. And I think some employers have amazing, amazing mental health and well-being programs. And there are programs out there that I said they're being done, but they're not. So it's kind of, you know, mental health washing and pink washing and green washing. And I love that word, washing, because you say you do it, but you don't. You know, you want to get people into work with disabilities or mental health concerns, and you want to ease them back in. But theoretically, you don't. You say you do. You have all these policies, these lovely, you know, social media posts, but you don't do it. And that really frustrates me when people say they're going to do it and they're doing it. But actually, when you kind of scratch away at the surface, an onion has layers. And every time you peel the layer away, something interesting gets revealed. And unfortunately, a lot of people kind of, you know, wash it, you know, or as I say, you know, give it a mental wash, because they say they're doing mental health and well-being, but they're not. You know, what's the point of saying it if you're not going to do it? Do it. Swallow your pride and do it. Don't just do it because you have to do it as part of your ESG. Don't do it because you feel that you have to show it as an employer. And if you show it, it's good enough. No. If you're showing you're going to do it, do it. So, and this is what I think as well, especially with kind of sick note generation, is these guys are struggling to get into work. And when they're coming to work, their anxiety levels are high. It's probably the first time in a long time they've come to work. It's probably the first time anybody's worked in a very, very long time. And as organizations, we are quick to get people in, get them trained, get them working because of productivity. And as we always say, the good old saying, time is money and money is time. But we've also got to think, and we're not asking people to kind of, you know, pussyfoot around people and take it really slowly, you know, treat them like an egg and, you know, handle them with extra care. Yes, you need to look after everybody, but if we're taking care of the basic needs of all our employees, are we providing them with the very basics that people need, which is that psychological need? Are we able to provide it where they're getting enough kind of, you know, is there water, is there food? If we do provide food, great. If not, it's okay. But are we providing them enough time to go get food and lunch? Are we paying them effectively? Are they getting enough sleep? Do they have enough money to buy clothes, pay rent, that kind of thing? Do they have somewhere that they can call home? Do they have a secure job? Do they have the resources to feel safe and do what they need to do, like employee assist programs? You know, is there that feeling of loving and belonging? Is there a community, a family? Are there friendships? So there's one employer that I've seen on Instagram and LinkedIn and other places where they have solely one person that is employed, one person employed solely to look after everybody within that organization. And that person is there to make sure that everybody feels that they are loved and they belong. And they have what they need for their job, and they feel happy to come to work, and helps them team up with people to build those friendships and that kind of sense of community. Because we all go to work, right? Everybody goes to work, and we have a sense of, you know, we're at work 8+ hours. Let's say maximum 12 hours a day we're at work, right? We're with people 12 hours a day. Thank God I'm not going home with some of them, seriously, because I can barely cope with them for 12 hours of work. I'd probably kill them by the time I got home. And another 12 hours of them before I have to go back to work with them. I don't think I could. I think I would, it wouldn't be great for anybody. But jokes aside, if we're working with these people, we're seeing for 8 hours a day, we build that bond and we build that connection. I'm not asking to go home with somebody every day and, you know, have a productive relationship outside of work with them. And there are some people that I do, and there's some people that I don't. And don't tell me that you have a perfect relationship with everybody you work with and that you talk to them all the time and you're texting them and, you know, you're all on the Facebook groups and you're all going out for drinks and you're having a wonderful time. You're not. Don't lie. Don't try and put the wool over my eyes because you're not. Because majority of people will socialize for work and then disconnect. They will ghost or gaslight you. They will literally blank you for the weekend. They'll blank you for the evening until they see you the next day. They're not bothered about you. There are some people I work with and I've got good relationships with that I talk to inside and outside of work. And that's a personal bond that we have. And we get on really well. And we can separate work and personal life. You know, I'm not around theirs all the time, they're not around mine, but we regularly text, we have conversations, we get to know each other, we go out for drinks after work sometimes. I'm meeting somebody tomorrow to go shopping and then go for a drink after work for a Friday. It happens. Then I'm meeting somebody else during the weekend to catch up for brunch, go for a walk, have a coffee, do something together. And that's just because I haven't seen them all week and I need to have a bit of a heart to heart and get some stuff off my chest. But I know I can do that with that person. But I'm not bringing them home with me every day. We're not living together. We're not, you know, in each other's pockets every day. But I feel that there is that love and belonging when I go to work. And this is what that employer does. Sorry, went off track. But this employer provides that one individual that makes sure that everybody has those basic needs and kind of follows the Maslow theory and the Maslow needs. Because if you've got people that feel that they have their psychological needs, their safety needs, their love and belonging, their esteem, and their self-actualization needs met, they're going to feel more productive, more confident. They're going to be less stressed and a lot more eased to come to work because they feel that they're part of something. There's a lot around productivity, and I could go on for productivity for a long time, but then we're putting too much pressure on people. And I'm not saying we should bring people into the business and treat them with kid gloves. We shouldn't. You know, I have this conversation with someone within the role that I have within my organization I work with. And when I'm creating the training plan for that entry level position coming in, we kind of take them through that first week and we're with them for those first couple of days, whether it's the 3 or 5 day plan we're using, we're with them. And some of the questions I get told is, well, you know, you can't hide them from the, you know, you can bring them to a hotel, but you can't hide them from what's actually going on. You know, you just can't hold their hand all the time. No, we're not hiding them from the realization of what's going on in the background. We tell them it's crazy. They can see what's going on. We just put it in a different context and say, guys, you see it's busy. Everybody's running to get their keys to their room. They're all going to get their trolleys and go upstairs. It's crazy, it's manic. But don't panic. This is kind of normal for this, but actually, you don't need to be like this. This is because people are just want to get their rooms done and out of the way. But actually, if you follow what we tell you, you're okay. You can still get it done because it doesn't matter if you're the first one to get your key or the last one to get your key, sorry. You're still going to be up there at the same time and you're still going to be starting the rooms at the same time. So don't stress because there's no point of stressing, right? Because we will hold their hand to a degree and then let them run wild after 2 weeks. Go, yeah, here we are. After 2 weeks, off you go, run wild, happy days. But we're still keeping an eye on them, but we're still making sure we meet their needs. And I think if employers paid a bit more attention to follow the Maslow needs model and look at, do we have a community? Do we feel that people feel that they've got that respect, they can have that self-esteem, that there's recognition, that people are able to use their strengths, that they feel that they've got the freedom to do their job and they have all the equipment and stuff they need. Are we giving them the chance to become the best that they can be with career development and self opportunities to grow, and that I can't even say the word, but that recognition that they can grow on a career plan, and that career journey is there if they want to take it. Do they feel safe when they come to work? It's all of these things that I think as employers we should be doing. And I think if we do that and we do it from day one, from onboarding, or actually from recruitment, it should start at recruitment, thinking about it. Yes, it's going to happen in onboarding, but let's start with recruitment. Let's make sure that when someone comes to an interview, have they got that basic needs? Do they feel safe when they come in the building? Do they feel that they belong? Are we saying, is the reception saying to them, "Hi, how are you? Good to see you. So, what are you here today for?" "I'm here for an interview." "Oh, great. What job have you applied for?" "Oh, you're going to love it. It's an amazing team upstairs. Take a seat. Let me call Bob, and I'll tell Bob that you're here. But if there's anything you need, let me know. But also to help you, here's a company brochure. Or have you looked at the company website?" "No, okay. Well, have a quick look because, that might show you how great the company is, but also have a look at it because they might ask you questions about the company. So quickly have a quick look." So you're kind of showing that you're going, "Oh, okay, great, thanks." They're feeling a bit more respect. They feel that they're kind of starting to belong slightly. They feel safe. Their personal safety and security is being looked after. You've offered them a water or a tea or a coffee. It's all the same. We follow the Maslow needs without thinking sometimes. But I think from a recruitment perspective, you need to look at when you're inviting people into interviews or assessment days, make sure you're kind of using that Maslow needs model. But when you're onboarding them and you're taking them through that journey within the organization, whether the induction is a week induction, a 4 week induction, a 6 week induction, however long that induction period is, or the training period is. But every day, it shouldn't just finish. "Oh, okay, we've done your induction. It's been 2 weeks. We've done what we need to do on the Maslow needs. Have we team? Yeah, okay, right, great. Off you go. There's work. Crack on. Be productive." No, we need to make sure we're doing it every day. And managers should be using this every day. And this is a model that is used in majority of qualifications throughout the plethora that I've delivered. Because in management qualifications, I have referred to this model for people to understand when you're managing and leading people that everybody has needs. And if we meet these basic needs for an individual, it makes them more productive. They feel that they're respected, that there's love, belonging, they can, their self-esteem and their esteem in general becomes a lot more better. They become more confident and more productive employees. And to get rid of this sick note generation, although it's great that there are medical services and other, services out there providing sick notes where needed, we need to make sure that we're making the work environment meet the basics. Yeah, I'm not asking you to spend hundreds and thousands and millions of pounds to meet this, but if you can meet the basics following kind of the Maslow needs theory, yeah, you're on for a winner. You are, I think, because if you've got a younger generation that are suffering with anxiety, depression, mental health conditions and concerns, if you're saying, look, we're supportive, we understand, look, everything's here for you. You've got, teas and coffees and washrooms. You've got a chance to have, there's a chill out room. Some employers create prayer rooms. So you might have a prayer room or multi-faith prayer room, for example. You might have a well-being room, which is filled with calming, relaxing music, dimmed lighting. It might be just a safe space for someone to go to have 5, 10 minutes out. Because, if they're feeling overwhelmed and too much, they need a break. They need that time out. And we shouldn't be getting upset when somebody says, this is just too much. My senses are overloading, especially neurodiverse people. If their senses go into overload, they need some time out. They need to step away. And we need to recognize that. And yes, we need to make some reasonable adjustments. And I think these are low cost reasonable adjustments that we can do as employers. But we need to show that the working environment is a welcoming working environment, that you can come to work and you don't have to sign yourself off sick because you're stressed or the workload is too much. We should have that open door policy. And people say this, and sometimes I've seen some things where people say open door policy. Well, you say open door policy, but what you mean is you're opening the door to trouble because you're getting to come in and tell you things and it's not great. But in some cases, an open door policy is great because you can say, listen, come talk to me anytime. Now, you need to look at compassion and empathy. And if you don't have compassion or empathy, maybe you're not the right person for somebody to come and talk to. And maybe you need to do your strength scope to see if you have compassion or empathy. Now, I've done this with the leadership team that the company I work for. And unfortunately, no one in the senior leadership team have any empathy, which is interesting. It's something that the team need to work on and that we're going to plan and do. But I think the key thing is that if we can follow and give individuals the basic needs from the moment they arrive and keep that going to make them feel safe, protected, that they belong, and that they've got the basics they need in work and life, you're on for a winner. The younger generations will come flocking to work. They will feel a sense of belonging and need. Yes, there's a lot of work around genders and pronouns and equality and diversity and, all sorts that still needs to carry on. And there's a lot to do around that still because that landscape is fast changing between the different, 70 plus genders, the different pronouns, how people are identifying and recognizing themselves to how employers need to react to, equality and diversity changing to equity and diversity. So there's lots of things in the landscape that is changing, especially now when it comes to employers making reasonable adjustments for individuals with the menopause. So women with menopause, it's being talked about that it gets covered under the Disability and Discrimination Act. There's big debate whether that's how it should be kind of tagged under. But employers should make reasonable adjustments for the menopause. And you could say the andropause, which is the male version of the menopause, they should be there as well. So it's all about the quality and diversity. And listen, I'm not saying, that, about the male menopause or the female menopause, the andropause or the actual menopause. I'm not against that debate. But I think as employers, we need to make sure we're aware of it, what we can do. And, we have a menopause policy and support and everything within the company I work for, which I think is great, probably not shouted out enough. So there'll be a big piece on that within the organization I work for and some training that I'll need to create. Happy days, I'll add that to my 100 and plus tasks that I have. But I think as employers, as we try and get people into work, as we try and support those coming into the working environment that haven't worked for a long time, that are struggling, that unsure about work, that haven't done a full 8 or 12 hour day before. Yes, we can ease them in and then get them in on the 16, 20 hour contracts or get them in for 30 hours, whatever it may be. You might have to ease them in, start them off in at small hours and then take them to full time and say, listen, as you adjust and transition coming back, let's bring you in 20 hours a week. And then after a month, let's review it and then let's increase it to 25, then let's increase it to 30, and then 37 and a half. So you could incrementally increase the hours to help someone adjust coming to work. But in that time, they actually might find that they're enjoying it so much that actually to you, actually, can I actually go full time now? Can I do the 37 and a half hours? And you're like, yeah, great, fantastic. So there are ways that you can do it. And yes, it's going to affect productivity and everything else, but you know what? Bite the bullet. Come on. You know, it's not that hard. You know, small pain for long-term gain. Yeah. So that really at small pain and inconvenience in the long run, it could be a long-term gain for you as an employer and for the individual. So I kind of waffled off a little bit on this topic as well, but I do want it to be known that, you know, the sick note generation is targeted at the young people, unfortunately, because, you know, they're struggling, and mental health is on the increase. And we know that. And a lot of services within our local communities are strained because lots of councils are going bankrupt because they don't have the money to provide the services. The NHS is overstretched and can't provide the necessary mental health services needed. So it's, you know, and charities are stretched as themselves because funding's reduced or they don't have enough people or volunteers to support. And it's, there's so many factors and, you know, different impacts on these areas that will delay things being done. But if you're an employer and you're concerned about this sick note generation, as I say, think about the Maslow needs model. Can you meet those psychological needs to that self-actualization? Yeah. Can you meet them all? Yes, you can. Is it going to cost you anything? No, it's not. It's small adjustments within your business to support people coming into the business and keeping them in the business. And if you can meet those needs and, you know, as I say, especially the middle one, which is the love and belonging part, there's a sense of community and belonging and respect. You know, it works and people will stay. And we all talk about retention. So a lot of employers will do employee surveys. And if you do an employee survey, do a deep dive and an analysis. And I did this with my employer. So my employer did a employee survey. We did it once for the first time. And then a few months down the line, or near enough a year down the line, we did it again. So I took those two reports, the first one we did and the second one, and I focused on L&D. And that was my key, you know, area that for that, because that's what I do, learning and development. I'm an L&D practitioner by career. So I delved into that to see if what people were saying in the first one to what people were saying in the second one, if there's been any improvements, adjustments, and kind of analyze it that way. It was interesting because there had been a large increase from the previous one to the current one by about 6 or 7% for people saying it was career progression, and about a 7 to 8% for opportunities to grow. So skill for, you know, learning had increased, opportunities to learn and, you know, progress their career had increased. But the biggest thing was that people felt there was only a 2% increase on people feeling they could actually utilize their skill set. So that gives us something to look at and think, okay, well, how can we get people to utilize their skill sets? Or maybe we need more career progression, more pathways. So we're looking at that. But if you do it, what you want to do is not just do it for the sake of doing it, see what people are saying, but you want to do it and then do it. Okay, you said, we did. Yeah. So we've realized from the past two surveys, this is what we found and this is what we're doing. So one of the things that came up was more apprenticeships. So great. That's, again, my bread and butter, and we're working on that. So there's lots of things that came out of that that me and my team can look at and go, okay, we can work on this. And this gives us, you know, another year to have an impact and show that we're doing something. But even if people are saying things about health and well-being, because it will be in there, the way they feel, everything, you can get those trends and you can do a deep dive analysis into that and get those insights. And that is going to help you improve your organization. You might even do a focus group and go to a job center and get some people that are looking to get into the industry, or they'll pull some people together for you and present your organization and say, okay, this is us, but actually looking at that diverse group, what do you need from us as employers to get you to come to work? What do we need to do? Because we're all sitting there going, oh, sick note generation, mental health concerns, all of this. But actually, are we going out and asking people? No, we're not. We as employers are dumb. We are. And I hate to say it. And some people will disagree. And I'm quite happy for you to disagree. But we are dumb sometimes. We've got people in our organization that you sit there and go, well, we don't have enough Romanian or Polish or Russian or Ukrainian or Italian or French or Ugandan or, Filipino or Nepalese working for us. Let's go onto Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, wherever we've got our social media posts, and let's push and join all those groups. Let's join all those groups. No, stop. Stop right there. Yes, it's great being part of 80, 90 different community groups. Yes, it's great reaching out to these individuals via social media. But hang on one goddamn moment. There are people in your organization that are already part of that community. Pull a group together and talk to them. How did you find this job? How can we reach your community more? What can we do as an organization to get people into work from your communities? That's how it should be done. Having those frank, honest conversations. And that's what I love about these podcasts is because it is frank, honest conversations. Although I'm still got people lined up to have conversations with me, and half the time it's just me talking, but hey ho, a lot of you are listening to me anyway, so happy days. But what I will say is go and ask those people, why are those people not coming to work for you? Why are you struggling to get those people in the door? It's the same with the sick note generation. We know that they are signing themselves off sick, but why are they signing themselves off sick? Are we talking to those people? There are organizations, charities, and companies out there that are dealing with this uneconomical outreach of people that are there that want to work, that can't get into work, and we can't reach them. So there needs to be someone bridging the gap. We need to find out why they can't come to work. What can we do to get them to come to work? And that's one of the things I love about the social recruitment advocacy group that I belong to, is because we reach out to those diverse groups for you as employees on your behalf. And we're talking to them saying, what can we do as employees to get you into work? We take that advice and create some toolkits and then push them out. But it's fundamental and key as an employer, as a recruitment manager, head of recruitment, talent acquisition manager, HR director, whoever you are in HR, doesn't matter, a hiring manager. If you're looking for more people to join your organization, stop throwing money at social media and marketing. Stop before you do and waste all that time creating SEOs and branding and marketing. Yes, get the marketing team to create something fun, exciting. But pull those groups in, have a chat with them, and say, how do I get into a community? How do I get more people like you working for me? That's the key. So, yes, I can sit here and talk about the sick note generation and how it's increasing because of now people have more access to getting a sick note, whether it be an easier option to get one than going to the GP and filling something out online and getting that sick note and going off because, they feel that their needs are not met and they don't feel safe and comfortable and, their anxiety and depression and mental health is not being helped by the employer from day one. Well, it's simple. And I think sometimes we overcomplicate things way, way too much. We do as employers. We overcomplicate things all the time. Even I've overcomplicated things at times. And, even when I teach apprenticeships and in training and anything, there's that simple thing, the simple model, KISS. I've changed the wording slightly to keep it simple, keep it simple, simplistic. Or people say, keep it simple, stupid. Yeah, kiss it. Keep it simple, stupid. That's what it is. That's what it basically means, right? But for me, I don't like the word stupid. So keep it simple and simplistic. Or Pacific. Keep it simple and Pacific. But we have to make sure we don't dumb it down, but we keep it simple. We have to, because the more we overcomplicate things, the more people are going to look at us and go, "Huh? You want what? I don't understand. I need to do what now? Oh no, I can't do that. No, I can't. That's just too much. What are you asking me to do?" And you're asking them to send an email about the report that they've just read, but you've gone round. You've probably gone from London to John O'Groats and back again, and the poor person's looking at you so confused and dazed. Huh? And I have it where some people in my company will try and tell me something and they go the long ass way about it. And I'm like, okay, so did you just mean this? Yes. Why didn't you say that? It's plain and simple. Keep it simple. Like, stop making it confusing. And I think this is the thing we need to do with those that we're getting into work. We need to keep it simple for everybody. Look at the Maslow needs. Are we meeting them day to day with our employees? Do they feel that have a physical belonging? Is that psychological side there for them? You know, is that safety side there? Is that love and belonging there? Is that esteem there? And is that self-actualization? I'll get that word right one day. Actualization correct? And is it there for them? So what we need to do is, as long as we can meet that from, you know, onboarding all the way through somebody's employment, the retention will help. Also use that model when you're going out looking at reaching to other diverse groups, and look within, because that person from that Romanian community or the Ukrainian community or the Bengali community or the Hindi community has got to you somehow. But how did they get to you? Where did they find you? Where can you get more people from their community to come and work for you? So keep it simple. Everything you have is already there in the business. And we're spending all this thousands and thousands of pounds on social media and marketing and, you know, trying to get people to find these candidates for us, when actually we need to look internally. But follow the Maslow needs for everything that we do within the working world. And especially as a manager, you should be following that with your teams. But I think if we follow that approach, those people that have been long-term sick or young people coming into the workforce, we're not handling them with kids gloves. We're making sure they've got everything that they need, that we've met those basic needs. And by meeting those basic needs, they're going to feel valid, loved, belonged. They're going to feel respect. They're going to get that esteem. They're going to get that psychological need, because you've got the basics they need: water, toilets, kitchen, comfortable air conditioning offices, you know, an open floor space, a friendly community, a family environment. I'm not expecting you to change everything overnight, but small changes can have a big impact on your working culture. The same as when you do strengths. So when I look at doing strengths, if I look at strengths in a team, I can see what the team's strengths are, what they're great at. Is there accountability? Is there trust? Is there clarity? Is there awareness? Is there stretch? Are they change ready? And sometimes you look at it and go, well, actually, they're not. So there's a little bit of tweaking to the team. Once the team is tweaked to their strengths and they can leverage everybody else's, they know what their blockers are and they know what the potential drainers are. Happy days, happy team, productive life, happy family, right? So for me, what I will say to round this up, because I didn't want to do this for too long, but I've gone over the allotted time I wanted. I want to do 20 minutes, but I'm now on 45 minutes. So what I will say is, as an employer, yes, the sick note generation is another generation of we're looking at going, oh my God, what are we going to do? We're struggling already to get people into work. Stop overthinking it. Stop complicating it. Give it a kiss. Mwah! That's my kiss to you. Keep it simple. It's all you need to do. Yeah. So what you need to do is look at the Maslow hierarchy needs. Make sure you can meet them for everybody. And there's that culture and environment of safety, well-being, belonging, respect, esteem, you know, self, you know, actualization, and everything that somebody could do to grow in the career. Keep that going. Don't just say you're doing, you don't do it, but actually keep it going. When you're looking to recruit people from long-term sick into work, go to job centres, do a needs analysis, yeah? Go and do a job needs analysis, yeah? Go out there, speak to, you know, people like DWP or People Plus, especially People Plus UK, that's quite a good one to go to, but also DWP, and say, look, guys, we want to get a group of people together because we want to ask some questions, like, we're an employer. What do you want from us? How can we get you into work? if you're looking at a certain age bracket between, 45 pluses, get some people to come in. I'm sure they'd love to come in. You could, I know, buy them, have some tea, coffee, juices, and, fruits for a breakfast session, or, order pizza and have it delivered and have it in the room. And that's if WP will allow you. But you couldn't do it elsewhere. But get them in and say, listen, guys, we just want to borrow an hour, 2 hours of your time. We want to get people like you into work. But as an employee, we want to make sure we're doing it right. So part of your ESG, you can say to these individuals, and you can record the, not video record the sessions, but make document the session and say, look, guys, how can we get you into work? What do we have to do to entice you to come to work? What are you wanting from us as an employer? Then take that back, analyze it, review it, change things. That's how you're going to get on. That's how you're going to be ahead of the game. And if you're not doing that, why the hell not? Why? What are you doing? I see lots of things on social media, people getting into work, all sorts of things. Perfect. Love it. But I'm not seeing enough work experience. I'm not seeing enough support from employers. I'm not seeing that engagement from employers going out there saying, how can we get you into work? You could go to a school or a college or a university. So, UK law is changing again. You have to stay in school till you're 18. I'm trying to clarify a couple of things because it used to be until 18. But if you wanted to go to college or do an apprenticeship, you could because they're now looking to scrap A levels. So that landscape is changing. And as employers, you should be aware of that. If you don't, they'll heads up. A levels are going to be scrapped. Kids have to stay in school until they're 18. They're going to have to study maths and English until they're 18. And they cannot do an apprenticeship until they're 18. So the funding kind of stream changes on there. So I want to reach out to a couple of providers, and we're going to have some conversations around how that will look on another episode, another bonus episode, obviously. But I think on this one, what you need to be looking at is okay, going to the younger generation and saying, listen, this is the job. How can we attract you to get into this job? Have those frank and honest conversations. I keep saying it. Same what I said to Malcolm today. If people just have frank, open, honest conversations with each other and understand that there could be differences, but you can call each other out on those differences in a safe environment where you can challenge each other, do it. Because if you like a relationship, you're going to argue, or always in a relationship. And if there's not one argument, is that a relationship? I don't think so. Every relationship must have an argument somewhere along the line. And people probably differ with that and say, Pete, what are you on about? Nobody needs to argue all the time. I'm not expecting people to beat each other up. That's not what I'm on about. But we're all bound to have an argument or disagreement on something, right? That's just being human. We're not always going to be on the same page. But if we can put our views and points and opinions across and they get listened to and acknowledged, that's fair enough. And we learn something from it. So, yeah, look, I'm going to wrap this up now. So, look at the Maslow hierarchy needs. Look at how you can implement that within your current existing workforce and how you can look at using that and adapt the entry process for those who are, this sick note generation and how you can support them. But if you're looking to get certain people into work, especially with mental health conditions and various other things, is actually reach out to those charities like Mind and other things and say, listen. Or even veterans and say, listen, we want to work with these guys and we want to get them into work, but can you arrange for a group of people, like a mini forum of 5 or 10 that are willing to come to the table, and we can get some information from them. We want to ask them some questions, like what is it going to take? And that's it. It's opening that dialogue. So to get rid of the sick note generation, to tackle you getting into diverse groups of people to come and work for you with health conditions, it's having that conversation. And I always go back to this. We employed, or we 2P'd in a hotel at Heathrow. I won't say which one. We 2P'd one in, and we hadn't dealt with deaf workers before, and it's been a bit of a touchy feely conversation around that, whether we do or we don't. Do we have the equipment? Do we have the reasonable adjustments? Who's paying for it? Is it the client? Is it us? What do we do? Not too sure. But when we 2P'd in this hotel at Heathrow, there was one deaf worker. He 2P'd in. He was amazing. Guy was an absolute legend. The health and safety director who's a lovely lady called Jade Voice. She's stunning. She's off to Amsterdam in June to do a big conference, and she's a guest speaker. So follow her on LinkedIn. But Jade went and spoke to him. And just by sitting and having that frank, honest conversation, she was able to find out things, adapt our training and other bits and pieces alongside us to make sure that we are inclusive fully. And surprisingly, it didn't cost us anything. We learned a lot from having that conversation, and it inspired us more to take more deaf employees. The same as we're working now with WorkFit, which is part of the Down Syndrome Association, are getting people with Down syndromes into work because they just want to feel a sense of belonging and a sense of independence. So we've had those conversations with the amazing Alison at the Down Syndrome Association, who's the employer engagement contact. And then from there, and knowing what we needed to do, we've then spoken to the WorkFit officers for the regions, and they've been having amazing conversations and giving us information and telling us how it's done. We've made some reasonable adjustments, which is perfect. And now we've got near enough three or four people with Down syndrome working with us in the organization I work for, with another five more to come in London. And they're scattered across the country. And I think it's amazing. But it's from having those conversations with those individuals to say, what can we do to get you into work? How can we adapt ourselves? And from there, we've tapped into to even more unhidden talent we didn't know that we've managed to unlock and pull into the business. So it's a no-brainer. We overcomplicate everything in life. When we look at things like the sick note generation, or we look at the long COVID issue where people have long COVID and, they're struggling to get back to work, we overcomplicate it. Yes, business needs are business needs, but we need to make those adjustments. And from following the Maslow hierarchy needs, communicating more directly with those groups that we're trying to engage with and bring into work, let's not just talk about it. Let's not have that conversation or dialect between ourselves as employers or internal teams and make assumptions, because the great way is don't make an ass out of me and you, because if you assume, you've made that ass out of me and you. So never assume. Go and have those direct conversations with those individuals or those groups of people that you're trying to connect with and make sure you're supporting. And just from having that, just having that, you'll learn a lot. And it will change your mind and perspective. And you'll find that people will actually enjoy working for you because you've taken the time to go and find out what the things that you can do to get those people into work. So if the sick note generation is due to mental health and well-being, there's a lot of amazing stuff employers do out there to support mental health and well-being. We need to be saying, okay, well, we do this as an employer. Is that going to help? Does that make it better? What else do we need to do? And then from there may be things that you can implement very quickly, or there may be things that may take a little bit of time, but at least you're working towards supporting a so-called sick note generation into work. And you're not just brushing them off under the table like we brush everybody off under the table, and we brush them with the same tarnish. So yeah, that's my rambling on sick note generation. I hope it's kind of made sense. I'd love to know your thoughts and views, so feel free to pop some comments wherever you listen this to listen blah, wherever you listen to this. This is why I love doing podcasts, because sometimes my brain goes 10 times faster than anything else. So as my brain is running, my mouth is trying to catch up. And that's a problem I have. And it's always a problem I have. My brain is going 1,000 miles an hour and my mouth is trying to catch up, and it doesn't always catch up. So I kind of get words confused and stuff. But it's, hey, it's all good fun. It's what makes a good podcast, right? If you can't even blimmin' say a word, or you can't get your sentence out, I don't know. But it's all good fun. But anyway, comment wherever you listen to this podcast, or you can always pop me a message on my LinkedIn profile, or you can send me an email at pete@creativemind.zone, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Maybe have a conversation directly with you and do a podcast together. But again, let's not tarnish the sick note generation as a generation that will never come to work. Let's be proactive as employers. Let's reach out to that generation and look at what is causing them to go sick all the time, and how can we as employers support that, whether it's through mental health and wellbeing programs, EPA programs, so employee assist programs, or just being more aware of their needs and easing them into work. Like I said before, you may gradually get them in 20 hours, 25, 30, slowly increase it to 37 and a half. But then again, you might just use the Maslow hierarchy theory, change your work culture slightly, and hey presto, within a few weeks they'll be like, I want to do 37 and a half hours. I don't want to do 20 hours anymore. I'm liking it. It's really nice. Can I come every day? Can I come more? Yes, absolutely. Don't think it as a burden. Think it as a project to work on and something to be proud of. Because if you can help support people get into work, you actually make someone's life and you actually make someone's day by showing that you care and support. We're all human at the end of the day. We all make mistakes and people will make mistakes, but if they acknowledge them and put their hands up and say, I made a mistake, you need to value that, respect it, and they'll learn from it. But as I say, we're all human beings at the end of the day. We all bleed the same. We all have the same organs. The only difference is the color of our skin, but that shouldn't even be a difference either. We're all human beings and we're all here doing and being something and living our lives best we can. And nothing should stand us in the way. And if we're feeling that there is barriers, we need to remove those barriers. And as I say, ways we can remove the barriers is by making some reasonable adjustments, having conversations, or those frank, honest conversations with those people that we're trying to get into work to find out what they want, not what we want. What do they want? And then that will hopefully drive down your retention, or improve your retention, I should say, and also improve yourself as an organization to show that actually you are an employer that people want to work for and stay a long time for. So, guys, again, thank you for listening. I've waffled too much. I always do. I could talk for another 20, 30 minutes, but I'm not going to bore you. So, guys, it's nearly an hour for this podcast. So, thank you very much for listening to this bonus episode of Say As It Is with Pete on the Generation Sick Note topic. I hope that I've been able to give you some more insightful insights into this topic, as well as some useful information and advice and guidance to help you look at tackling those Generation Sick Notes, but also tackle diverse groups that you may not have thought about before, and also support people with long-term health conditions getting back into work to reduce that sick note generation. So, guys, thank you for listening. Remember, you can go back and listen to this bonus episode as well as previous episodes in seasons one and two. I'm proud to say that season three is on its way very, very shortly as we celebrate 1 year of the Say As It Is with Pete podcast series. So, guys, thank you for listening. Enjoy the rest of your week, whatever you have planned. Enjoy the weekend. This is a bonus episode, so it's on a Friday. So I hope I haven't bored you too much. But yes, enjoy your weekend. There is another episode on Monday, as always, as we resume schedule with the Say As It Is Pete podcasts. And remember, you can go and listen on Apple, Amazon, Spotify, RSS.com, Google Music, wherever you get this episode from. Go and listen to it. Share it with people that you may find that may find it useful. And again, guys, thank you so much for liking, subscribing, and listening to all my podcasts. And as I say, have a great weekend, and I will catch you all on Monday.